Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Saxo Market Call podcast. I'm your host today, Melody Morgan, and this week I'll be filling in for usual host, Sonato. Today, I'm joined by the incredible Charu Chananana, head of FX strategy and macro expert here at Saxo Bank, who's dialing in today from Singapore. Hi, Charu, how are you?
Very well, Melody. Thank you, and so good to be on with you today.
I'm so happy you're here. As usual, for the first episode of the week, we're going to talk about macroeconomics and Forex. We'll also look a little bit at what happened last week, and we'll look ahead at what we feel is important to investors this week. So let's get started. Charu, can you give us an overview of the most important macro events from the past week?
Certainly, Melody. It was a very interesting week. We got some key inflation numbers out. And as you would know, inflation still remains the market's favorite debate. So in the US, we had the PCE number out, which was pretty much bang on in line with expectations. And as a reminder, expectations were quite hot. So the core PCE number, which is actually the one that the Fed watches closely to make their monetary policy decisions, that was up at 0.4% month on month for January, and it was the double of 0.2% that we saw back in December. But like I said, this was well expected after the hot CPI and PPI prints that we had for January earlier on in the month. So it didn't quite really spook the markets. It certainly means that the Fed cannot immediately consider rate cuts, but markets had that well priced in ahead of the release, with less than 4 rate cuts really now expected for 2024 and the first full rate cut not priced in until the middle of the year. However, I think there were some other tier 2, tier 3 kind of data releases in the US, which the market did not pay as much attention to, I would say. But we got some important signals from them. The consumer confidence number for February, a big miss there. The ISM manufacturing as well, which came out on Friday, again, we saw that is in contraction for several months. It dipped deeper into contraction again for the month of February. So again, raising some concerns there. But I think all of this was not really enough to fuel a dovish repricing for the Fed. We need a stronger push for that. The bar is certainly a little bit higher on that front. So either what we need is a weakening of tier one indicators probably, or just more consistent declines in these tier two or tier three indicators to be really sure that the economy needs rate cuts earlier than June or July that the market is currently pricing in. And then we got inflation reading out of the Eurozone as well, which was, again, a little bit higher than expected. So that has been quite a trend. You know, earlier last month, we also saw an uptick in inflation in Australia. So ahead of this Eurozone inflation release, we started to see a little bit of a split in ECB commentaries. But this uptick in inflation now that we got on Friday, that certainly means that for the ECB to kind of discuss an April rate cut at this point remains very, very tough. The economy is also looking like it's stabilizing. It is, I would say, recovering mildly from, the steep declines it saw earlier later 2023, because, you know, the winter has been mild once again, and that has pushed down the price of natural gas. I think for the ECB as well this week, it will probably be a little bit difficult to guide for rate cuts as early as April. Certainly inflation numbers have been a big focus last week, although I would say in summary that they did not quite change the macro narrative that we had built up going into the week. And, although going into Q2, things could change a little bit. We could see a little bit of a shakeup with the US economy starting to show more and more weakness, the Eurozone economy probably stabilizing a little bit more. But as of now, the macro environment has remained extremely neutral for the last week.
All right. And now looking ahead at the coming week for macro, if we start in the US, what should we be paying attention to, and how do you think that might affect the dollar?
I mean, again, you know, the markets, like I said, are very comfortable with what they've priced in for now in terms of the Fed easing. It is pretty much aligned with what the Fed itself showed in the December dot plot. I think the focus really is on, can we get any data or any comments out of the Fed members that can really change that narrative? So we do get some important data this week, particularly the non-farm payrolls data. Sometimes in short, it's just called the jobs data as well, because it really is the number of jobs added in the private sector and in government agencies in the month. So it is an indicator that is tracked closely by the markets. It is a signal on the health of the U.S. labor market, so also the U.S. economy in general. And it comes together with an unemployment rate number as well and wage growth numbers, which again kind of give us a sense of how much of that consumer demand will sustain and how much of that of a pressure that will put on inflation. So just stepping back a little bit, for January, we got a really hot non-farm payrolls number. It was at 353K, along with some upward revisions to numbers for December and November as well. So that was a really hawkish signal for the markets. But recently, the jobs numbers have been turning down. If you look at some of the other indicators like weekly jobless claims or the employment part of the ISM manufacturing report, these have started to, you know, show some weakness. And then obviously we have this anecdotal evidence as well of rising job layoffs at some of the major employers. So there are reasons to believe that we could get a softening in that headline NFP print this week when that number is released on Friday for the month of February. But the question is whether it will be enough to change the narrative that I would say is still very difficult, because even if we do see that weakening coming through, one of the interpretation would be that it is just some amount of cooling from that very high January print. The other interpretation would be that it is just 1 month of data and we really need more of that time series to kind of say that the US labor market has started to weaken. So I think we are certainly far away from a point where any data can really change the market's narrative. It's still, like I said, it's a data point that is closely watched by the market. So we do get probably some sharp moves in the markets in case of a big, miss or an upside surprise. But certainly I don't think that the Fed pricing will shift in a big way just because of this one number that's coming out. So for the dollar, like I said, yes, NFP miss can fuel dollar weakness, but I wouldn't expect it to go too far. I think there'll be some supports in the way, because for now, the story around US exceptionalism still holds up. I do expect that, you know, like I said earlier, I do expect that to start to be questioned in a few weeks' time as we get into Q2. But I don't think we're there yet. So for now, I think this week will again continue to be a very sideways kind of a movement for the dollar particularly.
All right. So let's pivot and look at Europe. This week we have an ECB meeting on Thursday, as well as the UK budget coming out on Wednesday. So how do you think those two events could affect the euro and the pound?
Right. So, yes, and pretty important events across the pond as well. For the ECB meeting, I think, like I said earlier, right, I mean, the Eurozone inflation print has come in a little bit higher than expected. Growth recovery is also taking place. So even though we've seen some split in ECB commentaries lately, I think this meeting will particularly be a meeting where Lagarde and team kind of try to avoid a clear dovish turn, because there will potentially be lack of confidence in the fact that inflation can reach 2% in a sustainable way. So I think, of course, no change in deposit rate or the other aspects of the policy are expected right now. But the ECB will revise down its inflation forecast. So that is a big focus for the markets because that can send a dovish signal. And markets, you know, it certainly is in need for clearer signals right now that we get rate cuts. Now, this revising down of inflation forecast, whether that suggests to the market that the ECB will clearly cut rates as early as April, again, I think no, but it can still spark a little bit of euro selling if the downward revision in the inflation number is steeper than what the market is expecting. But for now, it does seem like the ECB will maintain its wait mode and kind of continue to be data dependent in the meantime. So again, quite neutral. It just seems to be a very boring macro environment right now. So quite neutral in euro, on euro as well for this week, particularly despite some key headlines coming out from the meeting in terms of growth and inflation forecast, really. But yes, UK budget is probably going to be a little bit more interesting. It could probably spook up volatility a little bit, particularly for gilts and for sterling. A lot of focus there on tax cuts, since it is a pre-election budget. Now, what is the magnitude of tax cuts we can get? That is one big question. And how they are funded is also the big focus, you know, for the markets, because just going back to what we saw in 2022 with Liz Truss's budget, the market has obviously not completely healed from that scar. So there'll be extreme sensitivity to the funding part as to how, Jeremy Hunt really funds, if at all, he is going overboard with tax cuts. So what is, I think, also important to understand is how these fiscal announcements will affect the Bank of England's rate cut cycle, where about we have about 60 basis points of easing priced in as of now for the year. So given that, you know, the UK authorities will face funding constraints, like I said, there is a general expectation that this budget will not be a massive fiscal boost, even though it is a pre-election budget. So as long as we get a modest tax cut package, I think that will be good. It boosts the economy. It is slightly inflationary in nature, and that would also mean that we get a further pushback on the pricing of BOE's easing cycle. So that can provide some room for gains in sterling, particularly on the crosses, if you see against euro or against the Swiss franc as well, where potentially the rate cut cycle is going to begin a little bit earlier than UK itself. So yes, I mean, I would say some interesting opportunities in the FX space, but we really need to look beyond the dollar, which kind of remains stuck in a range for now.
And this week, we also have China's two sessions, which I have to admit, I don't know much about. So I was wondering if you could tell me and our listeners what exactly that is and why should investors care?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, big focus in Asia here these days on China's two sessions. So what are two sessions? They really are the annual meetings of the National People's Congress, the NPC, and the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference, which is the CPPCC. So the NPC and the CPPCC have already started their meetings yesterday and today. These meetings are typically held in March, and they are they last for about 2 weeks, and they are important because they involve not just the political parties, certainly the political elites make a huge presence, but also leaders in business, in technology, in media, and the arts, all of them kind of come together. And then you get new laws, you get new political appointments and government work reports as well, which kind of detail the progress of various public departments. We've already got the GDP target, the fiscal deficit target, the kind of spending that they're going to be making. So it really sets the path for the economy in the year ahead.
And given the current focus on China's economic challenges, do you think this year's event could be more important for the financial markets than the last few years?
I mean, certainly there's been a lot of selling pressure in the China markets for some time now, right? Given the economy is facing headwinds, the property sector continues to be a huge headwind, and also the geopolitical risks that China is facing. And as a result, of course, the market has become dirt cheap right now, right? So a lot of investors are just waiting on the sidelines for the right opportunity to get back into the China market. So any meeting, I would say any simple announcement right now from China is also being carefully considered by investors. But this is obviously a meeting of scale where, like I said, you could have some real change in direction for the priorities that the government has, which obviously kind of impacts the markets in some ways or the other. So, of course, that makes this meeting really key for investors.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there anything else you want to highlight that we might want to look out for this week in the FX markets?
I think probably sterling, as I said, is a big watch. And the China policy meetings, that in terms of the FX space, that makes a huge risk for Aussie dollar, given the close trade relations between China's economy and Australia's economy. Any key policy changes in China to get to affect Australia, and that moves the Aussie dollar as a result as well. But beyond that, I think moving maybe a little bit away from macro to politics, we do have the Super Tuesday today, which is probably going to be an important one to watch for markets as well. We have 15 U.S. states holding their Republican presidential nomination contests. And the big question really is how likely we are to get Donald Trump to get the Republican nomination, really. He does have a solid lead, and it could be an easy sweep for him. Polls are suggesting that. So I think that's something to watch, that if we do get that kind of a result, that will mean that markets may start to price in the case of a Trump presidency. And in terms of FX, that is a positive for the dollar. It is a negative for the Chinese yuan, and maybe even as a spillover effect for Asian currencies. It could also be a negative for euro, because again, geopolitics under Trump can be very different. So I think we could have some knock-on effects in FX as a result of that Super Tuesday today.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And if any of you listening have not listened to our special Market Call podcast about the U.S. election, we have a great one with our head of Saxo Strats, Peter Connery, and our beloved podcast host, John Hardy. So be sure to check that out. Now, one of the things that Charo and I have bonded over is that we both really care about empowering women to start investing. Right, Charo?
Yeah, absolutely, Melody.
Yeah, and since this coming Friday is International Women's Day, I thought we could chat a little bit about the gender gap in investing. So here's an interesting stat, because the reality about women in investing isn't actually as bad as a lot of people think. And the good news is that according to the CFA Institute, historically, only 40% of women used to invest in the stock market. However, there has been a lot of progress, because a recent study by Fidelity found that number has changed to 60%. Of course, there's still a lot of work to be done, but more and more women are investing. So Charo, could you talk a little bit about how we can narrow that gender investing gap?
Absolutely, Melody. A very important topic to take up. It's good timing in the run up to this International Women's Day, but really any day is a good day to take up this topic. Certainly a lot of aspects to be discussed here. Particularly, you highlight these stats around the gender investing gap. I certainly think we are here because of the way the relationship between women and money has been traditionally. I think we just need a change in mindset. If you look at some of the other stats as well, you would find that actually when women invest, they are more successful at it than men. So, but yes, of course, there's this lack of confidence, in taking that first step. In at least, the woman I speak with here, we do a lot of these events for women to get started in investing in Singapore and Asia and generally. In brief, my one key takeaway for those who haven't started yet would be really to, there's no alternative really to educating yourself for those women, you know, who have not started investing. They will get the motivation, they will get the confidence if they understand their goals, if they understand their risk tolerance, and understand why they want to invest. That's one part of educating yourself, is about understanding yourself. But two is also about really just understanding the basic asset classes and their return profiles, and, you know, what suits you on the basis of your own requirements. Once you have this basic understanding, I think there will be enough reasons to kind of get started. And then as you start, again, it's much needed that you keep educating yourself, both on understanding your investment scope better and the markets better, and kind of understanding which opportunities really work for you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great advice. I think it's so interesting. This is actually a global issue, because my friends in the States, they are also hesitant to educate themselves and to get started. And it's just, that's great advice. So that's what women can do. But how can our listeners help to close that gender investing gap? I've heard you talk about investing with a gender lens. So what does that even mean, investing with a gender lens? Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, so investing with a gender lens really involves considering gender-related factors. Like you said, you know, yeah, we can encourage women to invest. That's one way to close the gender investing gap. But there are many other ways in which the gender gaps persist, right? And for our listeners to be able to contribute towards closing those gaps, there's many issues like gender diversity, equality, women's empowerment, which can factor into your investment decisions as well. So if you incorporate a gender lens into investment decisions, you know, practically speaking, there are some approaches like you look for companies that prioritize gender diversity in their leadership teams and boardrooms. Research has shown that companies with diverse leadership tend to perform better financially as well. So I think that's one good strategy. Probably consider investing in companies that cater to the needs and preferences of women consumers, you know, companies that produce goods and services that are specifically targeted towards women, maybe healthcare, beauty, fashion, or wellness products and things like that. There could be a way to, you know, look at companies which are, you know, based on their commitment to workplace equality and inclusive practices, kind of, you know, you use that filter in selecting what companies you want to invest in. So look for companies that offer equal opportunities for career growth, for they offer fair wages, you know, flexible work arrangements for both men and women. So there are these different ways where you can find companies that that operate with towards women empowerment, that operate towards diversity and equality, and you can invest in them. That is called really gender lens investing.
All right. And what are some actionable ways our listeners can invest with a gender lens?
I would say, of course, like looking for those companies could get a little bit hard sometimes, I understand, but we also have easy access to them via some ETFs. So probably if I just highlight a couple of them, there's the SPDR MSCI US Gender Diversity ETF, which is, you know, which has a ticker called SHE. It tracks the performance of companies that demonstrate gender diversity within their senior leadership positions. So that's something that is, you know, gender lens investing. There's another ETF called YWCA, Women's Empowerment ETF, and the ticker for that is WOMN. So this is an ETF which invests in companies that support women's empowerment and gender equality initiatives. And if you want to go maybe a little bit broader, there's also a minority empowerment ETF, which has a ticker NACP, which invests in companies that support minority empowerment. So it goes a little bit broader than gender diversity itself, but certainly that is one aspect of it also. So I think those are some ETFs. And then Saxo also has a thematic basket on women in leadership that's available on our platform. So of course, there are a lot of ways each one of us can contribute to closing that gender gap.
Well, thank you so much, Charo, for coming out and making us all a little bit wiser today.
It was such a pleasure speaking with you, Melody.
And before we say goodbye, we at Saxo would like to ask everyone listening to reach out to one woman in your life today and encourage her to start investing if she isn't already. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with a new episode featuring our esteemed head of commercial ESG, Ida Johannesson. And we'll also talk more about that Saxo Women in Leadership basket that she mentioned. On behalf of everyone here at Saxo Market Call, I wish you a very happy trading day. Bye, y'all.